Welcome to Overtures. I recorded this back in January of 2022, and it was a super fun chat because a lot of it was an open dialogue and also getting into the nitty-gritty, talking about our experiences in the business so far. Sometimes you forget to have those conversations with your own friends. All links are in the show notes. Take your seats. We'll be starting shortly. Hello there. Hi. Welcome. I figured out background music. That's always fun. I hope everyone's enjoying that. Some nice uncopyrighted music. We'll have some more of that in future episodes. So I'm glad you enjoyed it and glad you hung out with us. Hi. Hello. Welcome. Hope everyone's doing well on this wonderful January day. It's frigid here, but it's kind of nice. You get those really nice sunsets at this time of year. But yeah, anyway, welcome to episode 9. My guest today is an actor and singer currently undergoing the struggles of getting back on the audition horse. Don't we all know that one? He is an alumnus of the theater performance program at Wagner College, and his favorite roles during his time there include Jack from The Importance of Being Earnest, Geppetto in It's Pinocchio, and John Thayer in Titanic the Musical. Outside of performing, he has recently taken an interest in swing dancing and learning languages. He hopes everyone has a prosperous and happy new year. This guest is a very good friend of mine, and let me tell you, he is the hype man and the perfect person to have with you in any audition holding room. This is the Liam Abate. There he is. There he comes. There he is. Well, there he is, folks. Hello. Hello. Hi.
Good to see you.
Good to see you, too. It's so fun because we haven't really gotten to talk to each other, I think, since like before Christmas.
It's been at least a month.
It's been such a busy month. I just want to give you a shout out really quick because talking about you being a hype man, you are always the first one to submit a question anytime I have a guest. So when it like on Instagram, when I say like, oh, I have this upcoming guest, like submit a question, you are always the first one in. And it makes my heart so happy. It's so much fun. So know that like literally every time you submitted one, we asked it live.
Yeah, you can go back and watch those answers. Great pride in doing that. I was able to watch Ted Lasso this past year and catch up on the hype of that. And I think the best quote that I think sums up my enjoyment of asking questions is "be curious, not judgmental," as he says in the show. And I was like, and I think, you know, questions, your questions that you send to the guests on here are the perfect example of that. Even if they're the random ones that I send from time to time, it's very good to pick people's brains on interesting little side questions like that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like your questions are always great. And also I really do need to watch Ted Lasso. I've heard such good things. Is that one on Apple?
Yes, it is. And okay. I would say it is. It's kind of worth the price to subscribe.
Here's the thing. I need to watch Ted Lasso and I also need to watch Schmigadoon. So part of me is like, I might have to do it. I might have to.
On top of that, I will recommend not to sidetrack, but I will also recommend Central Park, which is the creator of
from Bob's Burgers. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Because
That's three shows.
Okay. Well, with three, there we go. I just have to get an Apple subscription. There it is. There it is. But yes, I'm glad you're doing well. It's so nice to see you. For those who perhaps don't have context, how do we know each other? We know each other from Wagner, like most of my guests. Like many of the friends that I made at Wagner, I'm pretty sure I met you because of a good old Morgan C. Brown.
And it's kind of weird how we started becoming friends because it was like we knew of each other like freshman year.
Yeah.
But I don't think we hung out all that much.
I don't think so either.
It wasn't until sophomore year that I think that our like sort of friend circle kind of coagulated around.
Yeah, because I would agree with that because like I distinctly remember because you were rooming with a friend of ours, Alex Panisi, during our freshman year, and so I would constantly be like running into your guys's room to grab him for something, and like the amount of times that I've like been like, hey, and then like you were like, what? How can I help you? I'm like, I'm so sorry. Or like that kind of thing. I think it was one of those like, and then you knew Morgan from marching band. So yes. I think it was one of those definitely like everyone ended up in Morgan's room one night or another to hang out. And so like, it was just one of those things that like, repetition creates friendship, you know?
Pretty much. Yeah.
But yeah, I think the only show we worked together on was The Importance of Being Earnest, if I'm not mistaken.
I'm pretty sure, yes.
Yeah, I think that's the only one.
And that was mainly as you as a creative and me as an actor. We never,
yeah,
we never got to act together, which I think
which is also
a shame. Yeah.
Yeah, otherwise, like I ushered for Titanic, but I was never like backstage on anything you were on, but you played the titular role of Ernest in The Importance of Being Earnest, Jack to be specific.
Yeah.
But thinking back, I'm still trying to grasp the fact that we somehow put on an entire Oscar Wilde play in like 3 weeks, like 3.5 weeks.
Yeah. And I had to just completely just hit the ground running with that script, having like all the lines that I did, because I'd never had that amount of lines before in my
life. I don't know how you did it. You're like, well, here we go.
I was literally standing around during tech, just trying to remember the lines,
going line by line through the
script.
Because like 3 weeks is like a decent amount of rehearsal time, except for the fact that we were in college. And so we were dealing with a college schedule and rehearsing only on the evenings during the week and on weekends. So like, yeah, I still can't believe we did it. But it was such a fun show to assistant direct on. We all had too much fun. It was silly.
It was such a fun time.
And because we had such a fun time on it, I have to make sure that people get to experience a little clip of Importance of Being Earnest. And luckily we do have a clip from it. So we're going to enjoy this little moment of you and Jason being Jack and Algy, because how could we not enjoy that? So I pulled this fun little clip that we can take a look at.
All right.
Yes, and you yourself said that a severe chill is not hereditary.
Up until now, science is always making wonderful improvements on things.
It's nonsense. You are always talking nonsense.
Jack, you are at the muffins again. I wish you
wouldn't. There are only two left. I told you I was particularly fond of muffins.
But I hate tea cake.
Then why do you allow tea cake to be offered up to your guests?
The ideas you have of hospitality.
Oh, Algernon, I have told you to go. I don't want you here. Why don't you go?
I haven't very well finished my tea yet.
There's still one muffin left.
It's such a fun bit and such a fun scene. You gotta love some Oscar Wilde.
Oh man,
pure nonsense.
I just forget how angry Jack is all the time.
Yeah, because Algernon's a little bitch.
Yeah, and Jack is like, well, if it isn't the consequences of my own actions, double life and act like that's a normal thing.
He's like, why are you screwing this up for me?
He's like, you're falling on your own sword here. Why do you not like that? Come on.
but I thought that clip is so fun because it's just this pure moment of like, but I hate tea cake. Like the beauty of 100% seriousness in order to perform good comedy is so fun. And I think that moment really encapsulates it. And honestly, that scene can only work with just a large growl of, Algernon, you're being so frustrating. Like, it's just such a perfect end to the scene. It was just so fun getting to go back and rewatch that because we just had so much fun.
Yeah. And it's looking back on that interaction. I do enjoy, my acting tendency to not always escalate. If it's escalating, I do enjoy bringing it down a second, which I'm pretty sure was my motivation for going, but I hate tea cake. Yeah. And, you know, it's such a like, if I'm being scolded at, I'm like, but like,
But I hate.
So it allows the other person to re-escalate and not to have it feel like samey, you know?
Yeah, no, and I think that's super important, especially even like specifically between Jack and Algie in that moment, because like if they're just constantly continuing to escalate, like, oof, that's tough, and that's just really hard for y'all to keep topping each other. But I think when smart actors get a hand on Oscar Wilde's, like, when they can pick up on, like, oh, I see what you did there. And I think that was one of those moments, for sure.
Could you say it could be Oscar Wilde? Ha, 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 ha.
Absolutely, it can.
I'll head out now. Thank
I mean, look, he wrote the whole play just so he could have a pun at the end. So, like,
Yeah, we really did notice that. Like,
oh, yeah, first, no, and I played the end of the play as a clip, I think, for Ryan's episode. So we've gone over it before.
Yeah.
But, yeah. To kind of go back to the beginning of sorts, how did you first get started in theater? Because I don't know that we've ever talked about this.
Yeah, it's a bit of a twisty tale, I must say. I've never really thought about it until, you know, you invited me here, and I was like, well, like, let me trace it back to the beginning, because, like, I think, you know, from the very beginning, I think I was in a theater family, because my dad used to have Broadway cast recordings on CDs and whatnot. Mm. We had Aida and Lion King and a few others. We had the box DVD of the movie of Rent, which I was not allowed to see as a kid, because I was like, what is this?
You're like,
is
not to your older.
why are these all these different like different girls on here? What is this? And he's like, you're not allowed to see that until you're older. And I was like, okay. And then I didn't start performing until middle school, because, you know, I was starting to do different things. You know, I had started getting into like band and chorus and all of that. And then I think my sixth grade year, because they did Annie that year, and I was like, I don't want to do Annie. Oh, I was in that phase where it's like, I'm too cool for that. I don't want to do that. And then the second year, seventh grade, was Seussical, and my family had the original Broadway cast recording on CD. Aww. And we had actually seen it on tour at the Hippodrome in Baltimore. I was really into the show, I gotta tell you. So I was like, I really like that show. And my parents were like, you should try out for that show. And I was like, I think I will. And I pulled out all the stops. I was always singing in the car to Horton's part and the Cat's part and like the Mr. Mayor, even though I was probably not going to get the Cat. So I was like, why not just sing every part? So I'm familiar with it. I got the part of the Mayor of Whoville, you know, great strikeout first time on my behalf. And I was like, yeah, and it was a fun process, you know. It was stressful, but it was very nice, and it was low key. In hindsight, it just was not as important as I thought it was going to be. But at the time, I thought it was important.
Isn't it always the case, though?
Yeah, exactly. And then the next year, oh my God, we had the Beauty and the Beast Junior, and I was like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to go for Lumiere, and I'm going to nail the part. And I did, and it was wonderful. And so I was like, all right, I think I'll keep doing this high school bit. And then I kept on that way until sophomore year of high school, when we did Little Shop. And I did the voice of the plant, because I was like one of the only deep voiced people in the school. And I was like, I'm acting with my voice. I could maybe be a voice actor on the side, because at the time I was like, I'm going to do engineering. I thought it was very cool to build things and do the maths. And then junior year rolled around, and I finally did engineering at a nearby trade school, and found out I was not very good at engineering.
Hey, you know, sometimes you just got to try, and then you're like, well, now I know.
Yeah. And I mean, it wasn't even that I was bad at it. It's just that none of my projects worked the way that I wanted to. And I was really like, mad about that. So I was like, I'm not going to do this unless it's 100% perfect, which whatever. But at the same time, we were doing Beauty and the Beast again, not the junior version that I did.
The full version.
But like
the big, bad adult version.
And like, I somehow landed the part of the Beast because I guess there was nobody else to do it because there were no other deep voice people again.
No, but I feel like Beast is such a good role for you. Like the character arc of that is so specific, and I wish I could. I mean, granted, you were in high school, but like, I wish I could have seen that. You know,
yeah,
what I mean?
it's very much a role that I would like to go back to at some point if ever I'm lucky enough to get it.
And I just
remember just loving that whole experience. Mm-hmm. And like it was, and like especially when the production came together like at the last minute, like a lot of high school productions do.
Absolutely.
And yeah, and like the outpouring and just like the response was incredible. And like I remember how great it was because we had this this countywide festival, like where all the high schools got together and they did their spring musical, and they did like selections from it. And I did like the Beast solo, If I Can Love Her, like, even though we were done by that point, but we were like, we've got nothing to prove except to just show off how good we were. And I remember like we ended up at the end of everything, cause we got like a standing ovation. And then like, aww. I think about a week later, this kid at the trade school came up to me and was like, oh, it's the Beast. And he was just like, giving me a pat on the back and everything. And I was like, oh, wow, this is very nice.
Oh, that's so special. Like,
So I thought, well, my engineering dreams are dead. Might as well try acting. An easier career.
Yeah,
I guess.
An easier one. No, that's so funny because someone that I went to high school with, he played like he was the Uncle Max to my Elsa in Sound of Music and things like that. But when he was in middle school, he played Peter Pan. He's finishing med school right now. And even still in our hometown, people will still be like, oh yeah, Peter Pan. And it's still to this day so funny to me that like sometimes just in a community can latch on to things like that. But that makes it so special for the people who were involved. Getting to like the overture question of sorts, was playing Beast like that light bulb moment of this is what I want to do for my life? Or was that something maybe like a little bit later or earlier for you?
I would say like it wasn't a flick on so much as like the dimmer, like slowly ramping up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
Because like, as I said, I was like, I might do voice acting like as a side gig, you know?
Right.
Just to do fun things while I'm doing engineering to make money.
Mm-hmm.
But then as soon as that fell through, I was like, why not? It seems like an interesting prospect as any. And then I hit the ground running because I had about less than a year to prepare for college auditions.
Right. Right. Oh, and that's so crazy. Like the amount of time it takes to like go into that. Like people are still figuring it out, you know? Like,
yeah. And it was such a like a shock to me that there were like, there are performance high schools for this stuff. Like you can do, that's like the thing you do. You can hone your craft as a high schooler. And here I was coming out of public school.
Yeah. Like completely unheard of in like Southern Indiana. Like when I heard about that, I was like, wait, what? I would have done that. Like, but you know, we learned and gleaned what we did from our public school experiences and we take that with us, and that's okay. That's totally allowed.
Yeah. I genuinely have to thank, my voice teacher going out of junior year and into senior year, Larry Friedman, because he was just like, I went in, I did If I Can Love Her, like, you know, my regular shindig. And he was like, yeah, I think you've got something there. And let's see if we can get something up and running for in like 6 months. And I genuinely, if there's any like one point, because I don't want to give it up to like one singular person, but if there's like one pinpointing like person that probably got me over the edge, other than my parents for, you know, driving me to colleges and all that.
Of course.
But yeah, it was probably him for definitely opening the door. I didn't go through it fully, but it was definitely the door was opened.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Sometimes you just need that little, like, a little push. But yeah, so you are a performer, of course. But I'm curious, do you consider yourself an actor or a singer first?
Oh, that's such a...
And I know that's such a tough one.
Yeah, I know. I like to consider myself an actor first. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you don't act in the shower. You know what
right.
I mean? You don't act while you're doing laundry or, you know.
Right.
If you start dancing on the subway, then people start looking at you funny and you're like, what are you doing? Or like, hey, buddy, this is my train car. Go over to that pole.
That was a good comparison for that. Like, you don't act in the shower. I'm like, you know, you have got a point there.
It's really hard to hone the craft, you know, when you're just out doing random things.
Right.
You know, like you either have to do it in front of like friends who are like creatives or not creative to get their input, or you have to go to a teacher, you know.
Right.
And that can be kind of limiting, but you know.
Yeah.
But I mean, I like to think I'm an actor first.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, no, I was just always curious because like you have such a strong singing voice that I was just wondering, I'm like, which do you see as like your front runner, you know? But I mean, here's to say you can't be both, because God knows this podcast is kind of cheering that on, you know?
Yeah. And on top of that, I think, you know, labeling somebody as just a singer kind of, you know, does a bit of an injustice to how much like you can be expressive as with song.
Absolutely.
Because I remember I was doing in the before times,
yes.
You know, as it was, I was doing a staged reading for a musical about the Dublin Uprising of 1916. Mm-hmm. And basically I had carte blanche to do whatever I wanted with the music because it had only been, I think performed like once before with that team. And so I was able to do a lot with the music, and a lot of the people who were professional singers themselves who were doing like circuits and all that were like very, very good control and all that, you know, the performance and everything and how you're expressing the song and everything. And that was kind of like, huh, they didn't say acting, but I definitely knew it wasn't just they were singing, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's so special to get to work with music that's so brand new like that. And to have people who are like constantly working on new work like that be like, hey, good job. That's really awesome. What kind of roles and shows do you find yourself attracted to? Because I know you do a little bit of everything. Like you've done devised stuff with Dan, like on It's Pinocchio, but you also done Titanic, Beauty and the Beast, Ernest. So I'm just curious.
Yeah, it's really hard for me to pin down what my type is, because I feel like as a bit of a joke, I feel like I'm a 40-year-old trapped in a 24-year-old's body. So I mean, at the very least I could do like, you know, bigger hammy roles, you know, comedically. Yeah. They're just like, haha. But you know, on top of that, you know, when I find myself, attracted to is like, you know, Sweeney Todd-ish, you know, which I feel like is a bit out of reach for me at the current moment because of,
in terms of age, but like,
but I think that's also why I started taking an interest in Shakespeare, because a lot of that stuff, it doesn't, you know, a lot of it is due to, the material starting to be, you know, taken in new directions as it is like nowadays. It doesn't,
absolutely.
There isn't as much of like a hard age limit or like a hard type limit with it. It's only if you can, it's a lot of people are just looking to make sure that you can,
handle the
do the material, you know, handle the material.
It's being stretched in all different directions, which is
absolutely.
so fun.
Yeah.
And that gives you a chance to perhaps play roles that, like if you go into like this very specific dramaturgy of the age and the gender and blah, 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 then maybe you wouldn't play them, but they're like, ah, you know how to do the words. Let's have fun. And that's super cool.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I know you had mentioned Sweeney, but do you have any other like dream roles and or shows? I know that's a hard question for me too. I'm like, there's one in every show. So like, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, if we're talking dream roles, I mean, I wouldn't mind doing Phantom of the Opera, you know, just doing, just having half of my face covered and I just get to sleep and I just get to sit in the rafters and sing for like entire portions of the show.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? And especially since I've realized that over quarantine, as I've sang in the shower and noticed that my range has improved, I can actually hit his high notes.
Hey, there
like,
you go.
Why not put that on there?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. On top of that, I would say anything in Man of La Mancha. I really really like that show. I would kill to just be. In the chorus of that show.
Well, it's funny because Dan is about to be our last week's guest. So you'll have to go out and see him.
He's been texting me being like, I know absolutely nothing about this show. What is this? I mean, they're trying to make me dance and everything. And I'm like, you know, if anything, I feel like it's better that you don't know how to dance because, you know, what prison would have dancers in it? You know?
Right. Just makes it like slightly unrealistic, which doesn't entirely track for Man of La Mancha. That show takes itself a little bit more seriously than that.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my gosh.
Other than that, dream roles, I would say probably anything in maybe a Rodgers and Hammerstein, you know. Mm-hmm. Even though I have done Sound of Music, and I feel like that's another role that I'd like to go back to. Uncle Max.
Oh, you played Uncle Max too. Oh my God.
I did.
We need to like go back and there's definitely a song or two that we could do together, being that I did Elsa. So we'll need to take a look at that at some point.
Absolutely. Come From Away. Definitely. Ooh. Definitely Come From Away.
Yeah.
Other than that, maybe, a lot of the, you know, a lot of the, oh God, what's his name? I'm blanking on his name. The Inish plays, you know?
Oh yes. Like Cripple of Inishmon.
Yeah. The Isle of Inishmore.
Oh my goodness.
All those.
You know, it's an Irish name. You like, oh my God.
Yeah.
I'm literally Googling it right now. I should know this playwright. Martin McDonagh, of course.
Martin McDonagh.
I should know this.
I was going for like Loghain, Lonergan.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Finding the Irish sounding names and being like, which one is it?
Yeah. And I think that's an interesting thing that we like, that like plays don't roll off the tongue in terms of like, you know, the theater kids as much as like musicals do, you know?
Yeah.
Which I think is partially chalked up to, you know, there's no cast album for like straight white men, you know what
Absolutely.
I mean?
Absolutely. Exactly. It's like, let me listen to like my emo Eugene O'Neill album. Like that just doesn't exist, you know? But it's funny how talking about how plays don't roll off the tongue and things like that, I feel like graduate school was my crash course in getting as close as I possibly could to that, because like everyone was just rattling all these plays off the tip of their tongue. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm just now realizing I've read zero classics in terms of plays. So it was fun to kind of go back and get that crash course that I didn't necessarily have, but also get some extra ones on the side and have some ones to be like, oh, I always have these recommendations because no one knows these, they're new or whatever.
Absolutely. I just wish more theater performance, like, or at least musical theater, you know, programs did stuff like that just to make sure that their students were like prepared and like well-rounded just in case like a theater asked for a monologue. Cause it's
that's why our Black Box Theater Studio One became so important at Wagner, at least for those of us within like our friend group and beyond, because that's where we could like dig into that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So after college, really quick, because it's sticking in my brain. I do have a play recommendation for you. It's called By the Bog of Cats. It's by Marina Carr. It's essentially Irish Medea. It's a grand old time. I think I have a PDF of it. I can send it to you.
By the Bog of Cats?
By the Bog of Cats. Yep.
By the Bog of Cats.
Yes. And I hope I got that playwright name right, but
Amazing. That's
okay. I'll correct myself in the description of this video later on if I get it wrong.
Amazing.
But anyway, so after college, you started doing a bit more like film and TV work, especially background work and extra gigs.
Yes.
How did you get started with that?
That was, I found them on Backstage, funnily enough. You know, they were like one-off things for like Marvelous Mrs. Maisel or the plot against America that we're filming in the city at the time in like the summer of 2019. Mm-hmm. And I was like, why not? I have to, you know, it's a way to, you know, get a potentially a film thing for a reel or at least, and you know, at the very least I'm making money.
Yeah. Get that free meal.
Yeah, exactly. And, I just kept submitting and eventually, I got a text from one of the production houses. I think it was Grant Wilfley, and they were like, hey, here's your call details. And I was like, cool. Amazing.
That's so awesome.
And from there, and then from there I did Plot Against America, and then, and I noticed something strange on the sign-in thing that you do when you go to the shoot for the day, is that it said, wait a second, it says it's a union thing? What is this?
Ooh.
And I was like, and I asked around and they were like, oh yeah, that's a Taft-Hartley. So basically what that is for everybody watching and everybody in the future who wants to get into TV and film stuff, Taft-Hartley is basically when they give non-union actors on a job a union contract because they need to fill out a certain quota of SAG people represented. Right. So basically, and you can use that to, if you get enough of them, then you get then you are eligible to get a SAG card, which I got eventually because I was like, I enjoy getting a pay bump and not being treated like total crap.
Exactly. I mean, granted, hopefully those non-union background gigs start to improve a little bit. I've only been able to do one, but it was with the Blacklist, and they were very kind to us. So like,
yes.
I was like, okay, I'll take that. It was a big protest scene. There was a lot of us. I can imagine it was a long day for them.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that's super cool. And it's always been like, so I'm like, every time I see you, I'm like, so like, what have you been doing? Like, it's just so exciting. And I'm hoping to get into more of that myself. I know you've been doing like a lot of like TV background film work, but do you find yourself leaning more towards theater or film? And of course it can be a little bit of both because fuck the binary, you know?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, kind of that basically, as I've been saying since I graduated, basically whatever will put food on my table, you know what I mean? And whatever puts money in my pocket, I will do, even if it's just for the credit, I will, you know, maybe I will do that, you know?
Yeah. No, the mediums are just so crazy different. And so it's always interesting to see when people like enjoy one more than another or like so on and so forth. It's just always very interesting. But yeah. Is there anything in particular that you feel like you learned from working on set that you found surprising or that you didn't necessarily learn in school when you're learning theater, you know?
I think it's just maintaining endurance is the one thing that I learned from doing film, because it's just like you're not on all the time like you are when you're on stage, you know, and you have that set amount of time that you have on stage and then the scene is done and then you transition to the next thing. Here you have to maintain, the illusion of the scene, like for however long that is, with film rolling, and they do like multiple takes, however many takes they need in order to for them to feel satisfied. Right. And so that can be very, very exhausting because it's not like with theater where it's just like, okay, we're doing a run through and then we'll be good. I can get my notes and then go. No, where you're doing the same exact thing over and over and over and over and over again for like 10, 15 minutes at a time.
Right.
You really have to hunker down and basically be like, okay, at the very least, I have to remember where I'm going.
Yeah. Or if you're taking a break so that like the cameras can like set up in a different location or whatever, and then you're expected to pick up emotionally exactly where you came from.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you have to carry the motivations and the intricacies of the scene with you, like for like take after take after take. Mm-hmm. It's such a different beast.
Oh, absolutely. Because I worked on a very short film called Elevator, and even just like the endurance, my character was literally just like met the main character at the elevator, went in, I said a few lines to her and the elevator. She maybe had a grunt or two in between some of my lines. And then I was like, okay, we'll have a good night. And then I left. And the amount of time it took to just film that was so much because we were playing with like, how can the film camera sit in the elevator? Playing with like, we couldn't shut off the elevator. They had to do certain things with that. So like, I was like, oh, I'm fully prepared to do my three lines. And then the endurance, again, like you were saying, the endurance of like, okay, but you have to be ready in between, like, oh, pick up from this second line or like just this third line. It's very strange and completely different beast, like you said. But yeah. Do you have any fun stories from set or like cool people you met or fun shows you shot for?
Fun stories from set. I mean, I would say the peak of my acting career is Tony Shalhoub calling me an idiot on the set of, I mean, not like IRL, but like in scene.
Yeah.
With Maisel, you know. And you know, it's funny enough, that was probably the first thing I did when I came into New York. And you know, my take actually made it to the last to the final cut in Maisel, you know, when you see me. That was so funny because everybody I knew in our friend group and in my family were like, that's him right there. And it just cuts to me just going,
like, you know, immediately getting yelled at by Tony Shalhoub.
And me not even realizing, is he talking to me? Am I the idiot? Me?
Oh, that's incredible. Oh my gosh. Do you know what episode or season that's in?
Oh, it's season three. I want to say like episode like near the end. It's when Weissman goes back to the college after he's been dismissed, and he's like, okay, I'm just going to say goodbye to my students one last time. So I want to say it's like episode 10. I'd have to watch again because I know the next season's coming up. So I want to rewatch.
Yeah. So people can go back and rewatch that episode and find you going.
We can get a screen cap and be going.
Exactly. Exactly. We'll make it a meme. It'll be great.
Amazing.
So now we're going to take like a little quick break to do an Instagram question or two.
Absolutely.
So both of these are good friends of ours. It'll make for great conversation. So our good friend, Zach Flash 999, what character ideas do you have for Pinky's next D&D campaign?
Oh, geez. Okay. So anybody who's not in the loop. Yes, I do play D&D with Zach and our friend Pinky. And basically over this past year and like, or 2 years, I've been basically hitting the grindstone because I have, you know, nothing else to do but sit around and think. I've been basically trying to come up for ideas for characters in D&D for like, you know, future campaigns or whatever. And basically he's really liked a few that I've come up with. So I'm sure this is the motivation for this. From what I have now, I have a couple floating around in my head. So one, I have a zombie, and he's basically a zombie from the Roman Empire, but in whatever the heck world of D&D this is. I know it's a lot to come.
No, but that's fun because it kind of gives you that like that Thor moment of like not understanding certain cultural references.
Stuff, yeah.
Cause like I'm from the Roman Empire. I don't know what any of this is.
What is the Empire's gone? What do you mean? You know what I mean?
Which empire? Yeah. What do you mean? There's only one.
And then and so basically he's been resurrected, and he has like his weapon is basically the weapon he found, and it was in his chest and it was glowing, and he was like, what is this? I don't know what's going on here. So I feel like that's the character hook that I would like for him to be in any like future campaign if I have him. And then other than that, I would say I've been kicking this around like a couple of times. It's basically a killer robot that has lost its kind of kill drive. And so it's basically a child in the body of an assassin. Oh, basically, I did actually want to do this for a previous campaign that I was doing with Zach and a few others. Basically, to sum it up, was Lieutenant Data, but he stabs people.
That's good. That's good.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
And one last one was basically a paladin that has seen so much injustice, he wants to conquer the gods for allowing so much injustice to endure, basically. Ooh. Basically kind of like having a tension between being pure and wanting to do the right thing, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that sounds like an epic play right there.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
It's basically Das Rheingold, but he's an orc.
No, that's super sick. That was an awesome question, but also some really sick answers. Has, out of my own curiosity, just because I've had a few people on now who are theater people but also play D&D, has that ever led you to an interest in like writing, because that involves so much character building and storytelling?
I mean, I think the reason I can do so much of this like character building is because the way D&D is set up, it gives you just like archetypes, so you don't have to come up with the thing from scratch. I think if I had to do any more, I'd be like, I have no idea where to start. Because I think that's the thing with most things with me, whether it be getting back on the audition horse, or, you know, updating a website, or, you know, checking, or just building a character. The worst part is just the starting of it for me.
No, absolutely.
It's just like, I have to make the time to sit down, and I have to commit to sitting down, and I have to do the boring work of just, I have to fix that, and I have to fix that little thing, and I have to fix that little thing. And I feel like, you know, my focus-addled brain, I don't think could focus for long enough to write that stuff.
No, that's fair. That's understandable. But I'd be very curious to see what you come up with. So I don't know. I would say tinker around with that a little bit, because
after
hearing characters like that, I'm very curious. But we have one more Instagram question from our good friend Jason Biss. What's your recipe for that killer mac and cheese you made?
Oh, yes. Okay, so there's a bit of a story for this. We basically had a Friendsgiving for his apartment lives in Brooklyn. And so basically I was like, yeah, sure, I'll bring something. I don't know what I'm going to bring. So I basically threw together a baked mac and cheese that me and my roommate usually put together from time to time. And so basically what it is, Jason, is you make a roux. You put in some butter. You put in some flour, you start mixing it up until it stops smelling like flour, and it basically starts, it looks very kind of pale-ish. And you slowly add in a bit of milk, just about, I think about 4 cups worth, slowly. So it doesn't form any lumps. And then from there, you just add a little bit of cheese. It can be any, but I usually go, when I make it, it's usually like cheddar, I think Gruyere, and like one other. Yeah.
That sounds so good. Oh my gosh.
Yes. And then, and then basically you make your pasta, and then you basically all put it in a baking dish, and then you pour it over, and then you mix it a little bit. And then what I didn't do when I went to their apartment, but I usually do with my roommate, is we basically put breadcrumbs on top. We cook some breadcrumbs and we put them on top, and then you bake it. And I think that's for about 45 minutes at about 375 or 400. I forget.
Good exactly. For you for remembering your recipes that well.
Yeah. I mean, what are scripts, but just recipes for good theater. You know what I mean?
What a good nugget. That was fantastic.
you gotta memorize it, and then you put your own spin on it. You know?
No, that's very accurate. I think that's how I need to start my approach to cooking, because cooking freaks me out, and perhaps it's because I feel unprepared.
Yeah, that's fair. I feel unprepared most of the time anyway. I usually scramble when I'm cooking, and I'm like, oh God, did I mess it up?
Hold on. I have so many things to do.
And then you finish it, and you're like, okay, I didn't mess it up. Or if you mess it up, you're like, well, I got to eat it anyway.
You're like, well, I know exactly what went wrong, and got to deal with it. And I know we were talking about this earlier before, but something that I know we wanted to talk about on this stream in particular was just the struggles of auditioning.
Yeah.
And one thing that I think, not that we tend to forget, but needs to be continued to be reinforced, is that auditioning is the job. The work is if you're lucky.
Yes. And it sucks, because the work is just so tedious and boring. Like, forget the struggle of being like picked or not, or like the stress of being in the room, like trying to remember, just like trying to make sure you have like you have a book and that has like all the stuff in it. Make sure you have a contemporary monologue and a classical monologue.
It's like a minimum of like 4 monologues in your back pocket, as well as like an entire book of music that you gotta know off the top of your head, you know?
Yeah. And on top of that, like, there's new stuff coming out, and so you're constantly questioning, do I need to update? Does this even fit me? You know what I mean?
Like, if it just came out, like, do I risk putting it in for fear that it's going to become, like, the next overdone song or, like, something like that?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's just, there's just so much tedium in it, you know?
For sure.
It goes back to my point. It's just the difficult part is just the starting of it, because it just takes so much. It just takes so much detail and commitment that, like, if you're doing auditions, then you've pretty much already done half the work.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, you just have to kind of, you know, trust that, you know, you'll do it. And if you've fallen out of it, like I have to, you know, work up to do that first 50%. And that's tough, you know. Yeah. Especially something that's when you have to pay bills, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I think something that has been at least a saving grace for me a little bit is, like, while I'm still rebuilding things again in terms of like monologues, book, etc., is that being that so many auditions are virtual at the moment and there are self-tape submissions, like, I just need to worry about getting the song on tape and send it in and not have to worry immediately about like, oh, what other songs do you happen to have in your book? And things like that, and worrying that perhaps you don't have them prepared. It's like, at least I know in this moment in time, I am just submitting, or like, I am just filming this one song. I can do that. I can get it sent in, rather than being nervous that you don't have all 16 songs in your book memorized.
Yeah. And I feel there's a bit of a flip side to that, you know, at least personally, because, you know, when you send it in, that's it. Like, you get no feedback unless it's a yes or a no.
Yeah.
You get no sort of vibe where it's just like, you know, even if they say, do you have something else in your book, they're at least, you know, interested in seeing more of you. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, there's something about getting that live feedback in the room.
You can't vibe check a Zoom call. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
It's not even quite like the same way.
It's not like not like feedback in the criticism sense, but like more of just like you were saying, like literally the vibe check in the room of just like, okay, I can tell this person felt that, or like, they didn't quite like that, or et cetera, et cetera. Like, you have no idea. And so sometimes I know for me, I'm like, I'm just going to send this to so-and-so and see what they have to say. Or like even sending it to someone who's like not necessarily a theater person to be like, did you enjoy this? What did you get out of this? Is also a fun one too. But in talking about like auditioning itself, I feel like the audition process itself doesn't have to be negative, because I think when we take auditioning in the context of like, are you working? It's like, well, I'm auditioning right now. Sometimes it can feel like it has the same connotation of like, I'm unemployed. And yeah. I think people outside of the theater industry, and even those within it, need to remind themselves that it's like, auditioning is the job. So saying that you're auditioning and you're not necessarily working on something doesn't mean diddly squat.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure you've had that too, where it's like when you have like the trying to tell the family, like, oh, like family, like what are you doing right now? And you're like, well, I'm auditioning, and feeling weird about it, when it's like, well, no, that's part of my job.
Yep. Yeah, I remember my aunt was just like, oh yeah, how is everything going? And I was just like, and I think she asked what my whole degree was. And I said, I was like a theater performance major and an anthropology minor. And she was like, ah, yes, that anthropology minor will come in good use. And I was like, and the rest won't?
Yeah, you're
what
like,
do you mean?
What do you mean by that? That's a little more than a backhanded comment.
Yeah.
But that's super frustrating. But
it is what it is, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, it's a lot of hard work, but I know for myself, I try and make it as enjoyable as I can in terms of, I know I really enjoy organization. So when so many parts of this audition process are completely out of my control, I'm like, well, if I can organize like a calendar, all of these different things I want to get in, then I'll get joy out of that and then just have to let the rest go. But in terms of you, what are some things that you do to try and not enjoy the struggle, but like make the struggle something a bit more positive for yourself in this vast world of auditions?
Funnily enough, I just make sure I have, I think it's good to just have a performance or a set of performances that inspire you to be like, ah, that's what it's all about. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I think, and it's wonderful that this came after, this came after the holiday season, because I think some of the best performances ever are in holiday movies, like freaking like George C. Scott in Christmas Carol and Jimmy Stewart in It's a Wonderful Life. It's just like I remember I saw a comment somewhere where it basically said, you think you know what acting is, but then you see Jimmy Stewart on the bridge at the end of It's a Wonderful Life, just basically begging for his life back. And you're just like, I don't know what acting is at all. Because it's such a like a visceral, like from the soul kind of moment, you know, that it just like, it has to feel like this isn't him acting. This is like, he's actually that, you know? And it's just like, if you look and you look at that, you go, well, dang, that's what it's all about. I gotta keep busting my ass, you know?
Yeah.
Because I know I can do something like that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's that motivation. Like, okay. I can see where the end goal is. I just gotta like do my own work to eventually get there.
Yeah. And on top of that, it's taking solace in the small bits of a performance. You know what I mean? Which I tend to strive for, you know, in when I do work, you know, once I've memorized, I'm like, okay, I've memorized it. Now I need to find little things to do, like while I'm in here, that, you know, make it like that, where it's not like, oh, he's acting. This is a person doing the thing, you know?
Yeah. Finding those nuances for yourself.
Yeah.
And finding ways to live them.
Yeah. And I think especially during the pandemic, especially during like that bit in 2020 around like May, June-ish, where it was where like, I think it was starting to set in, at least for me, where it's just like, oh, this isn't going to just be like a couple months. This is going to be like a long haul thing.
Yeah.
The Hamilton Pro Shot coming out on Disney Plus, where it's just like, oh, that's what this is about.
Right.
Right. Yes. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I definitely had a similar feeling where just like it watching that hit me in the gut, being like, oh, right. Yes, this is what I needed. It's just the healing, your soul as an artist healing a little bit when you're given that constraint of not being able to do a thing for a long time. And I think, yeah, getting to see shows again is just so exciting for the opportunity to. But when we're not, this is a this is a very difficult segue, but it's okay because I have notes, so it's fine. When we're not like seeing shows and auditioning and things like that, I feel like you and I have both worked a wide variety of other jobs to help ourselves financially while auditioning.
Yeah.
What kinds of different jobs have you picked up over the years?
I would say, I mean, it's mostly gig work for me, mostly temp work, but basically that runs the gamut to whatever the heck they're doing.
Yeah, that's why I'm curious.
Yeah, I've sorted emails, I've done front desk work, I've basically been, I wouldn't say a delivery boy technically, because it was still in office, but it was basically like whenever they got something delivered, they would bring it to me, and then I would basically ring up the person in the office saying, hey, your food's here, and they would come and get it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've just basically done like basically a lot of like heavy lifting grunt work, just moving stuff around in offices, sorting things. And then this past summer, I was actually able to get a pretty steady gig as a bar back. So that was very nice.
Yeah.
Then on top of, yeah, I'm pretty sure that's it. So I've pretty much worked a lot of service end of like a lot of industries, not industries, but definitely like a lot of office spaces.
Yeah, absolutely. And not to like get political, but thinking of, I don't know if you've seen this online, the new New York City mayor, Eric Adams, talking about like service workers and saying something stupid about the educational level. It's like, well, no, we are both very educated people and we're still working these jobs. Just like, come on, pull it together. Well,
yeah, but that's not the part that gets me. It's that like, it's the part where it's just like he's using service workers as like a guilt trip to get people back into offices. That's what's kind of getting me, especially in the middle of like a COVID spike where it's just like, why are you throwing the people who voted you in under the bus?
Yeah, the least safe like time to be shoving people back into offices is during a COVID pandemic strike.
Yeah.
Or spike. Striking, you know, that we can do that too.
I mean, if anything, you know, the whole, you know, this whole, you know, mess, you know, being a card carrying union member, this whole situation shows why we need unions.
Exactly. So. Exactly. Coming from a proud SAG union member himself.
Exactly.
Well, it's crazy to believe that we're already at the end here. We've been on an hour. It's been an absolute blast. Where can people find you on the internets, interwebs, all that stuff?
Yes. You can find me on Instagram and on Facebook, you know, under my name, Liam Abate. I'm currently undergoing a renovation for my personal website, liamabate.com, because I was like, I last worked on that 2 years ago. I should probably give it a facelift.
Yeah.
Especially because a lot of the material on there is from like 2+ years ago, and I should probably put more stuff in my gallery that's actually like reflective of me now. Like the fact that I have a beard now.
Yes, exactly. That's going to be a big one when it comes to casting directors and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I mostly try to stay off of like social media, but if you find me, you can find me there, you know.
Yeah. And that's where people can get in contact with you and so on and so forth.
Absolutely. Yes.
Amazing. Amazing. But yeah. So hopefully when your website is done, let me know and I will put that in the description of this video so then people can check it out.
Absolutely.
But yeah. And going over to my socials real quick, you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Laura_Marjoram, my website, www.lauramarjoram.com. You can find this show, Overtures, on Instagram at Overtures Show. There's two S's. And then you can find us here on YouTube, Overtures Show. Google that, all that fun stuff. Subscribe, set reminders. That way you can come join us live and say hello and ask questions. Liam, do you have any final thoughts for viewers live and in the future?
Yes, I do.
Do tell.
Yes. Speaking of politics, I feel it would not be remiss to be like, this is January 6th, and this does mark the 1 year anniversary of the riot at the Capitol last year. And so I do implore anybody who is watching now or who is watching in the future, you know, you only get out of democracy what you put into it. So, and, you know, if ever there was a time to get involved and get registered to vote and to get in and to get and to, you know, spread the word and to, you know, do all that stuff. It is now, you know, so.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well said. And, you
know, yeah.
Yeah. Well said. Thank you. Thank you for that.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, of course. This has been so much fun. And thank you for everyone who's been able to tune in, watch currently, and as well as those watching in the future. So thanks for joining us. And I will see you next week. Bye.